Hey everyone, this amazing ESO Network show is brought to you by our fine sponsor, Amazon.com. Please remember to shop Amazon for all your geeky needs, no matter what time of the year it is. All you need to do is go to ESOpodcast.com/ESOAmazon or click on the Amazon banner on the ESO Network webpage to go to our e-store. It's the best way to shop and the best way to support this program, and it doesn't cost you anything extra. Okay, that's enough of me babbling for now. Now on with your regular scheduled show.
Hey, cats and kittens, it's once again time for the Pro Wrestling Roundtable, and I am always your host, John Morganea. Well, not always, every once in a while I'm sick or something, but most of the time. So anyway, as always, I'm joined by Richard Yule and Mr. Jonathan Williams, and tonight we're going to be joined by Mr. Joe Crow, and we're going to talk about wrestling theme music, which is a poll winner on the Facebook page that we have for Pro Wrestling Roundtable, and the listeners majorly voted for wrestling themes. But we're also, we have an interview that Richard did with Isaac Kane, who returns to us. We've had him on the show before, obviously, who runs KFW, and he talks about the new show that's coming up, his regular show, Black Harvest 11, which will be on October 6th and Friday. So sit back and give a listen to everything. And as always, we thank you for listening. So listen already.
Welcome to Myobi Defend Your Childhood, the podcast where every week we put a little bit of your past on trial. Wait, you don't know who we are? Well, fine. First, we take a movie that you like. You know the ones. The ones the buses always had on field trips.
We got a real jam going down. Welcome to the Space Jam.
The afternoon animated show tie-in.
Or rewrite history, DuckTales, new.
Or the ones your parents didn't want you to see, but you watched at a sleepover. So that's the game. Movies are 10 years old and the defendant hasn't seen them in 5. Then
we're here to talk about The Sandlot. When I was a kid, I wasn't allowed to play with the other children, so this is how I learned human interaction.
Ask them what they think.
Obviously, I remembered earwigs, because as soon as my parents found out that I was deathly afraid of parasites, they were like, let's show her Wrath of Khan.
So, in the end, does your past hold up? Can you defend your childhood? Tune in every Thursday to find out.
Welcome back to the Pro Wrestling Roundtable, and I am here with a friend of our show. He's been on a few times. He's a wrestler, wrestling promoter, wrestling trainer, all things wrestling, Mr. Isaac Kane. How are you doing, sir?
I'm doing great. Thanks for having me come on. So this is like, this is the trifecta. This is the trip.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah, we love having you on, and we always get a good perspective. This time, it's for promoting another event that you're going to have in Pigeon Forge. Is it Pigeon Forge or Sevierville?
Well, it's technically Sevierville. We're right at the edge of Pigeon Forge. So
yeah,
right as you're
close.
Going into Pigeon Forge, we're very close. You know, we're on the main parkway, so it's on that same road going into Pigeon Forge.
Yes, and that is your hub. We'll give out the location and stuff later. But I really want to talk to you about, so in October, you're having the Black Harvest event, and this is the 11th one, correct?
Yeah, this is the 11th anniversary. I think you were there for the 10th anniversary. Maybe not, but the last year we had the Rock and Roll Express in. This year, we got Juventud Guerrera coming in, and then we got Hurricane Helms coming in. And I worked really hard on the Juventud Guerrera deal because I felt like, you know, this is a guy that doesn't work in the States as much anymore, especially not in the South. So we wanted to give a little bit to those pure wrestling fans you know, to see a former WCW Cruiserweight Champion, a WCW Tag Team Champion, and a WWE Cruiserweight Champion. And then also giving them that mainstream superstar with Hurricane Helms, because if anybody watched in the 2000s, you know, they knew who Hurricane Helms was. You know, and then also he was big in the Cruiserweight division in WCW. I think he held the Cruiserweight Championship it was the last Monday Nitro that was ever held. He defended the Cruiserweight Championship at that event. So.
Yeah, he was Sugar Shane Helms, I think, then.
Yes.
And,
yeah.
He was one of the better parts of that later Cruiserweight division of the 2000s.
Yeah, so. Yeah. A lot of people talk about that Starrcade ladder match that he took a part in with the two other teams whenever, you know, the three count and all those guys were in that ladder match and they were doing all those crazy spots. So, you know, a lot of guys talk about that, but then, you know, a lot of people remember him for his Hurricane Helms character whenever he took on The Rock and beat The Rock and all that cool stuff he had going on then. So a lot of people remember that. But I think it's really special, you know, to have someone like Juventud Guerrera come in. And it's just something that people don't get to see often.
Yeah, definitely. When I saw you had announced Hoovy was coming in, I was taken aback just because you don't see that name that much, but it's very cool. I mean, he was a huge part of the heyday of the Cruiserweights in WCW, so it's very, very cool that you got him in.
Yeah, it was, you know, I was looking for someone, you know, there was a few names that crossed my mind, like Ultimo Dragon and you know, some of those, that's kind of what I was looking for. I was looking for someone that was big in the Cruiserweight division, like a Psicosis type personality. And Juventud Guerrera was a little bit easier, to be honest with you, to contact. And, I just got in touch with him and we kind of went from there. But also if you look at our undercard, you know, the rest of the card is stacked. So, you know, your main event being, you know, Menace going up against Juventud Guerrera. You got Shane Williams teaming with the Hurricane to take on Shane Daniels and Ray Fury with Not Safe for Wrestling. But then also you got Bullet Club member Chase Owens taking on Toby Farley for that hybrid championship. So there alone is kind of like three matches, you know, that are stacked right there that are going to be, I'm expecting, you know, match of the year candidates out of any of those three, really, you know. And then you got, you know, I'm going to be making my return to the ring. This is kind of an exclusive. So by the time this podcast drops, I think the news will be out that I'll be teaming up with Kenzie to take on my brother, Tommy Henry, Keith Knox from the Brotherhood. So a bunch of huge matches are going to be taking place that night.
Wow, that's very cool. You're getting back in the ring. I'm looking forward to that. And I did see, I haven't been able to get to the past couple of shows, but I was there when Knox came back with your brother, and he laid waste to a lot of the undercard there that night. So, and I heard he's been wreaking havoc ever since.
Yeah. And then you also have the guys from Wrestling with Ghosts. You know, they got their TV show that's up and running. You can watch it online. They're working out a deal to go on television that's big and funky, going up against the Southern Bad Boys for the KFW Tag Team Championship. The KFW Championship is going to be on the line. Cadillac Cowboy is going to be putting that title on the line. I can't say quite yet against who. But then also something that's really cool is all these guys from Chattanooga and different areas are going to be coming down. We're going to be having like a four-way number one contenders match for that hybrid title. And it's going to be with guys like Jaden Newman and Chris Crunk and King Bailey and then one other mystery guy. So those guys have been killing it at our Daredevil events. I mean, those guys have been putting on wrestling matches that, you know, I haven't seen in the area in a long time. I think your mind's going to be blown by them. So just a lot of really cool stuff that's going to be going on. We're going to have a Halloween costume contest. It's going to have that Halloween fall theme to it. So it's going to be really fun, you know.
How did the Black Harvest event start? Because this is, I mean, am I correct in saying, like, this is your kind of WrestleMania kind of thing?
Yeah, it definitely is. You know, we did the first event. My brother is a big fan. Well, myself and my brother are a big fan of just horror movies in general. And we're a big fan of the fall time, you know, that kind of feeling in the air where everything's a little bit more fun. You know, you got Halloween right around the corner. And we wanted to do a big event that was kind of wrapped around that mood, you know, to kind of make it a little bit different. You know, as a kid, I always loved Halloween Havoc, you know, I always loved the sets and I always loved that stuff. So we wanted to do something, you know, our first Black Harvest event, we brought in Chris Sabin. And that was whenever TNA, you know, the X Division was on fire. I mean, that was still whenever you had to rent the TNA pay-per-views for $10 a week, you know, on pay-per-view.
Wow, that was a while back.
Yeah, that was quite some time. And then we, you know, at Black Harvest 2, we had booked to bring in Daniel Bryan, but he got signed to WWE, and then we ended up bringing in Christopher Daniels instead. And then the next year was Jay Lethal, who went on to be the ROH champion. And then we, you know, we've had Abyss and Sanjay Dutt and the Rock and Roll Express, like I mentioned before, just a ton of different superstars, Matt Hardy, just, you know, Sabu, Tommy Dreamer, Raven. So for us, this Black Harvest event is just, it's where we put like all of our eggs in the basket and we give everybody a little bit of everything. And we really try and blow it out of water with these events. And again, this takes place on the Parkway. That's 1004 Parkway, Sevierville, Tennessee. It's at the River Plantation RV Resort. It's kind of an upscale RV resort. They have a really big conference center down there. You know, it's carpeted, it's air conditioned, built-in sound system, built-in speakers. It's a really amazing venue. It's a huge step up from doing shows at an armory. So for us, we love having the events there. It's easily accessible for people, you know, and I think we're going to have a blowout event. I think it's going to be huge. You can get your tickets online right now on Facebook. You know, you just go to KFW Wrestling Events and you'll see the link there to the brown paper tickets, and you can get your tickets there.
Yeah, I'll put a link in the show notes. So if people are interested, they can just go and look at the show notes and click on the link, and it'll take you right to it.
Yeah, definitely. Thank you.
Yeah, no problem. That's how I got my tickets. So I'm already into the VIP. You have VIP tickets as well. Are they still for sale, or did they sell out?
No. It's the ringside seats. So it's those first two rows. We still got some of those right now on sale, but they're going to go quick because really starting now is whenever we really start pushing this hardcore for, you know, it'll be for one whole month. We'll just be pushing constantly gearing towards Black Harvest. You know, I think one of the things that helps us a lot is that, or at least separates us from other shows, is where we run three events a month. You know, our stuff's more story driven. So our fan base is more emotionally invested. So a lot of those return customers, they've been customers of ours for years, as opposed to just doing spot events, you know, just throwing wrestling out there for wrestling's sake or doing one event every 2 months. So, you know, we really try hard to give people something. So you're going to see that emotionally invested crowd. That's another thing we're really happy about, is the crowd really gets into our event just because they've seen the progression of some of these stories.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, even though I don't get there every show, when I am there, I see the same people most of the time, and it really is a cool environment. The building, the venue is great, like you mentioned. It's much better than other places I've been, you know, of flea market wrestling or so. It's much more comfortable, so that's
what we try and, you know, match that vibe. You know, it's a little bit more upscale, so not that, you know, you have to be a classy person to come to our events, of course not, but what we're trying to say is that you're just going to be a little bit more comfortable, you know, at our events as opposed to somewhere else. But yeah, I'm really looking forward to it. I think it's going to be a really a really big event that's October the 6th, those VIP tickets, whenever you get your VIP ticket online, you know, you get to come into the door, you know, like 45 minutes before the general admission audience. You get to meet the superstars. You'll get to meet Juventud Guerrero. You'll get to meet Hurricane Helms. You know, you get to get in early, get your seats, get comfortable, meet everybody, go to those tables, get your autographs and all that stuff, and be settled in by the time that general admission audience, you know, gets to come through the doors.
Yeah, I'm pretty excited about Hurricane being there. I know he's a pretty cool guy, and he's very nice to the fans. And so will he have a match that night?
He will. He's teaming up with Shane Williams to take on Shane Daniels and Rey Fury. So I think that's going to be really cool. That's a nice tag match. You know, Shane Williams has been a staple with us for years, along with Shane Daniels. And I don't know if you've seen the videos and the pictures lately. Shane Helms, or the Hurricane, had an injury that was kind of nagging at him for a few years, but he finally got it taken care of. This guy's really, you know, geared himself back up into the wrestling. He's kind of going, you know, at that pace that he used to go in. He looks so much better now. He looks a lot healthier, I think, since he gave himself time to recover from all the injuries that I think were nagging him over the years. And he looks to be in 100% shape. So I'm really looking forward to that, you know.
Yeah, he was involved in a terrible motorcycle accident many years ago, I believe.
Yes.
I'm sure he still heals from that, but that's great to hear he's back at it and in 100%. So, I mean, like you said, even if you don't know the names of some of these guys, like, support indie wrestling, like, some of the best stuff. Chase Owens is a name that's been out there. He's part of the Bullet Club, as you mentioned, but we were talking before we went on air, and I was at a wrestling event when Chase Owens came back, and he wrestled Tristan, I believe, and that was, I think, at the halfway mark of the show. And it was...
Yeah, and that sold the show, yeah.
Oh, it was incredible. Yeah. I mean, some of the... that match was just... It was jaw-dropping. I mean, to see it live, and you have good seats. Like, every seat is really a great seat in the house, you know.
Yeah, and there's not one spot in there that you can't see action, that you don't feel close to the action. For anyone that's out there that only goes to WWE events, I highly suggest you try out an independent wrestling event, you know, preferably mine, but you know, one that's close to you, even that's cool, because you can't match the intensity of an independent wrestling event and being so close to the action. You never know when the action is going to spill out into the crowd, you know, and you really feel right there. It's kind of like the dying days of, you know, independent wrestling, you know, have now made a comeback, and independent wrestling seems to have kind of came into the spotlight again, where you have all these really awesome professional wrestlers that are getting signed to NXT. You know, that's kind of the negative part, is that talent pool's kind of been sucked up. But also you have the younger guys that are stepping forward. You know, we've had a lot of superstars that started out, you know, we had Xavier Woods at one of our Black Harvest events, but you know, this is whenever no one knew him.
Yeah.
So it kind of gives you an idea of how wrestling progresses. You come to one of these shows, you may be seeing a future, you know, WWE champion. That's just how the facts work nowadays. And I can't suggest it enough, especially a guy like Chase Owens. You know, 2 weeks later he fought Menace and they had a 5-star match.
Yeah, and Menace, many people may not know that name, but in the South, he's actually very popular and a terrific talent.
Yeah, he's kind of one of those only guys in the South that can do that style, where it's kind of like that, you know, Philadelphia style of wrestling. You know, we had him in there against Ricochet, you know, a few months ago, which you had me on talking about that event. And they killed it. That was a match of the year candidate. And he's really one of the only guys, I think, you know, in my opinion, and maybe Chase Owens too, that can go like that, you know, and we've been proud to have him for 10 plus years at our event. You know, he's really came into his own. He's just a fantastic talent.
Well, I'm very excited about the show. Again, the details are, it is October 6th and so, yeah, you want to give that address again so people can write it down?
Yeah, that's 1004 Parkway, Sevierville, Tennessee, the River Plantation RV Resort Conference Center. If you need any more info, just check us out on Facebook at KFW Wrestling Events. You can find us on there. You can keep up with all the information, get your tickets there. We post videos constantly, so you can actually kind of follow what's going on, at least story-wise, with our shows, you know, by going on there and checking out the Facebook page. So you can get a better idea of who's fighting who and, you know, all the other stuff that's going to be going on the undercard.
Yeah, and I suggest even if you're a couple hours away, just make a vacation of it. You know, Pigeon Forge is a great little touristy town, Gatlinburg, who can use all the, you know, all the support from the fires it had earlier, late last year. You know, just make a weekend of it and come down and let me know. I'll hang out with you. I'm sure Isaac will say hi to you. And, yeah, just let us know on our Facebook page. And we'll have a meet and greet with the Pro Wrestling Roundtable fans. So
Yeah. It's a really gorgeous area down here. Also, real quick, I just want to say we're going to be doing raffles, a ton of raffles that night. We're going to be giving away tickets to different things that are inside of Pigeon Forge, tickets to like the Smoky Mountain Deer Farm, which is like number two in things to do in Sevier County, you know, tickets to Dollywood. So yeah, making a vacation out of it. I mean, heck, if you message me, one of our sponsors is a cabin owner, so she owns multiple cabins. If you want to make a stay and you drop mine, you know, you can get a really good discount there. So that's Lydia's Cabins and Rentals. You can find her on Facebook, too.
Nice. Great. Well, Isaac, I really appreciate you coming on and talking about the show. I'm very excited about it, and I know you are as well, and I can't wait to see everybody.
Awesome. Thank you so much. I hope to see everyone on Friday, October the 6th in Sevierville, and I think we're going to have a massive event.
All right. Thank you, Isaac, and we'll be sure to have you on again real soon.
Thank you. Godspeed, guys.
Hey, it's Rick and Sherry from the Life in a Kilt podcast.
If you are a kilt wearer, a kilt lover, or simply like to gawk, come hang out with us every week on Life in a Kilt podcast.
We discuss kilt life, regular life, and everything in between and underneath.
We've got humor, interviews, sketch comedy, pop culture, beer reviews, even indie music. And we discuss it each week in a way that only we can.
Well, only the way I can.
Oh, hush. I discuss it so much better than
whatever.
You.
Anyway, discover the joys of kilt life without ever leaving the comfort of your own headphones. Kilts aren't required, but if you've got one, feel free to buckle up.
That's the Life in a Kilt podcast with Rick and Sherry every week on the ESO Network.
Hey, folks, it's time to get musical. And what we mean by that is that music has been a part of wrestling since the 80s and somewhat even before that. But really, since the 80s, it's been become a integral part of wrestling. To the point that there really isn't any wrestlers that don't have a musical theme that comes to the ring with. So tonight, we decided that we will return to this topic after the first, you know, few episodes that we did way back in the olden days. And we are going to go around the table here, and we're going to talk about our favorite themes or some of the best themes, or just talk about the themes that we think should be mentioned. And as always, I am your host, John Morgan Neal. And that there over there is the guy that flips the switches and turns the knobs, Mr. Richard Yule. And, of course, our bon vivant reporter at large and interviewer, Mr. Jonathan Williams from WrestlingPopCulture.com. And once again, the one and only great Joe Crow has joined us, and we're always happy to have him. So, all right, let's get this party started. Let's try that.
I like it.
All right, let's do alphabetical. How about that?
Well, once again, I'm surrounded by J's, so y'all figure it out.
Last name alphabetical. You don't go with the first name alphabetical. You go with the last name alphabetical. So that would be Mr. Joe Crow, or guest. Which is the only proper thing to do. We let the guest go first.
I like being first alphabetical.
Yeah. First alphabetical.
Well, I will start off with a person. The theme music for a person whom I met at Dragon Con this year, and I'm still freaking out.
I know
totally
where this
freaking
is headed.
Out.
I know where this is headed.
I hosted a panel with Ricky the Dragon Steamboat.
Woo!
Cool,
oh,
man.
My Lord. It's too much. It's literally like I can't process. I can't.
I understand.
Were you having like an out of body experience watching like the little Joe Crow? The little Joe Crow was watching the adult Joe Crow interview.
Literally, yes. Yes, yeah. That I was backstage, and all of a sudden here comes Ricky Steamboat and Kane. Kane was also there.
Did you ask Ricky the arm drag you?
Oh, yeah, exactly. Oh, that's such a great idea. Yes. How about do the best arm drag in the world on me right now? Now, however, at Thursday night's Dragon Con Wrestling, which they have, and I did not get a chance to see it, Thursday night, Mr. Steamboat unleashed the chops on a wrestler at that show, and that
awesome.
I am told was amazing. But
it was indeed, and actually, I should mention that wrestler was the guy that we had on the show, I guess, last year, that cosplays as a different wrestler every year. Suave. I don't know
right.
if you guys remember.
Yeah. Yes, we
so
do.
He was Ric Flair.
He is a member of the Pro Wrestling Roundtable. He doesn't really chime in much, but I've seen him like one or two things. And he's a member of our group there. So, awesome. I do. That's great. He got to take the chops. I bet you that was a thrill for him.
Yeah, he was Ric Flair, so he came out.
Oh, of course.
And, you know, did the Ric Flair thing and then got the Ric Flair treatment.
That's great. That's too awesome. I love it.
So great. So, Ricky Steamboat's theme, it is, and it took me years ago, before the internet, you know, I had to find his theme. I had to dig it up because there were no theme song CDs. There were no lists anywhere except for dorks like myself who handmade the lists. To find out, to keep records of whom and what the theme songs were. But Ricky Steamboat's original and best theme, and of course he got a generic WCW theme later and a WWF theme at various times. But the major theme that he, like during the height, I believe during WrestleMania, the WrestleMania era with him, was Sirius by the Alan Parsons Project, people that did Eye in the Sky.
Well, actually, Sirius is a sort of a preamble to Eye in the Sky.
Yeah,
Easily are played together.
And
also famous for the Chicago Chicago Bulls entrance, too.
I was actually just going to say that. As I said... When I found it out, I did the research years and years ago, handwritten in a notebook. Yes, I still have it. it's like it's like a minute and 15, minute 30 seconds. It's the preamble to Eye in the Sky.
I'm a big Alan Parsons Project fan, so.
me too. This is how I had to buy the cassette to get the Sirius theme song, and well worth it. Love Alan Parsons Project.
Oh God!
Anyway,
yeah.
That theme, it's one of my all-time favorites. Even if, you know, he didn't use it forever because, yeah, you know, I guess you got to pay Alan Parsons to if you want to use it forever.
That's the thing. That's where people mess up. Not only had to pay them, they pay the record company.
Well, sure. But regardless, loved it then. Still great. It just says Ricky the Dragon Steamboat. To me, it's epic.
I agree.
It's an epic instrumental thing that says, here comes mm-hmm. that dude. And yep. even though the Chicago Bulls used it, I think of Ricky Steamboat.
Oh, I agree. Totally. Yeah, I totally agree. Greatness. That's a good choice. Very good choice. Mr. Yule, it's your turn.
My turn. Well, most of my music is going to be from the newer stuff, but that's just the way I went. And I think this
theme song... And because you're a young punk. But...
No, this is new. I mean, this is mostly newer stuff. But anyway. But I think this one fits the wrestler better than anything music, is the villain Marty Scurll.
Oh, so good.
His so theme music. So when I was with Jonathan.
Pissed off now. I am so pissed off.
Because I took yours?
No, because I didn't think of it. Oh. And I had thought of it, I would have bigged it.
Well, you know, me and Jonathan went back in January, and I think that was the first time I'd really seen him, and I think that was pretty early on in the gimmick itself. But yeah, the theme music, the video, I mean, everything that goes along with that, I mean, it's very awesome music. So I don't, you know, I mean, I think it fits that creepy, dark vibe that he puts off. I don't know the name of the band that sings it, but I believe it is a band that does.
It is. Actually, it's a he originally used the original song from the band, which I can't think of the name either top of my head. But then it's been reworked to where it has more of the whoop whoop and more of the loop. So it's better as a actual going to the ring theme rather than just playing a song. So, yes. But too awesome. Too fucking awesome.
And if you watch Ring of Honor, they're one thing that I like that they do is when they're playing the entrance music, it puts the name of the band and the name of the song on the screen.
Do they? Oh, yeah. I didn't know that. Yes, oh, that's I love really that. Good.
Yeah.
That is really good. Yeah. I like yep. that.
They no, do it every time. Tell the truth.
There's some of those that WWE do it on the little thing that comes up, whatever you call those.
Well, if it just said Jim Johnston every time, it'd be boring.
Well, no, we're talking about outside.
Yeah,
things, you know,
NXT themes. You mean? Because I feel like
some of the NXT themes or the because I know I've seen them put up the Bray Wyatt one, which is from a band.
When they usually have the bands on at some point too. So.
They usually give them a shot at one of the big shows, WrestleMania or whatever. But very cool. Which that band did get to play, I think, didn't they?
At Bray Wyatt.
Yeah, they played it. Yeah. They played at WrestleMania.
Yeah. That's cool. You know, I was sitting there looking at things today, and then I was playing the one from WrestleMania 30 of Bray Wyatt, and I forgot all about that hot voodoo girl. Whew. Anyway, back to the
boy. Your memory's slipping if you forgot about a hot voodoo girl.
For goodness sake, what the?
I had to go check into a home. So, anyway. So, yes, I agree. So, I guess it's my turn. And I'm going to go, because there's no question that I talked about the Freebirds last time. I don't remember doing that, but I'm sure I did. And we all know the history of the Freebirds and how they brought music to, you know, made it the thing. And not the first to ever use music at all, but first use rock and roll and blah, blah, blah. We all heard it. And I'll probably talk about it again eventually. But so Bad Street USA, Freebird, you know, from Leonard Skinner, that's great. But there's another song that I usually associate with really bringing music to the fore for wrestling. Because, I mean, I could say the Von Erichs using ZZ Top's LaGrange, which was perfect for them and was a great counterbalance. And so there you had the Freebirds and the Von Erichs both using music and so on and so forth. And that certainly, you know, helped grease the wheels. And then everybody in world class, or the stars in world class started using music. But the one piece of music that to me now associate with not only wrestling, even though it's also used for one of my favorite movies, but... Championship, and that's Thus Spoke Zarathustra. which of course is Ric Flair's thing. And that piece of music to me is so indicative. It just means so, it's essentially or viscerally means wrestling champion. That is just, to me, I think it was one of the things that caused music to become part of and parcel to wrestling, because it was just so right. Flair coming down in the big robes, the lights, that music, very huge, big deal, pomp and circumstance, and yeah, gotta go with it.
Yeah, that's, I mean, there's a few other songs that I won't mention just in case somebody else does, but that were songs beforehand and very widely known. But that song, yeah, how can you not think that? I mean, we used it for our promo. I mean, if you hear our promo on the other podcast, it'll be there. So, I mean, yeah, you can't hear that song and not think Ric Flair. And a lot of people that aren't wrestling fans probably know that that's his music as well.
Yes. So
it's one of those that just, I mean, for the longest time, also, I didn't know of it anything else. I mean, I thought it was his music.
Right. Yeah.
So and, I did a cool thing with Ric Flair's theme.
Oh yeah.
2 years ago, at Dragon Con, and I do cool things elsewhere, but it's not just Dragon Con stories that I have. But so
I was about to say, do you live there?
The actors from 2001, A Space Odyssey came.
Oh yeah.
It seems like it. When I'm there, it seems like I live there. Yes. But two of the two astronauts from 2001 came, and before I brought them out on stage to do their Q&A, I said to introduce them, and we had a pretty full ballroom full of people. I said, what I want everybody to do is just sing the theme music to 2001. So I got this whole crowd going bum bum ba da, and then I interrupted them and I said, "Wouldn't it be cool if Ric Flair just walked?"
That would be awesome, too awesome.
Jeez, but yes, that's all I'm saying.
That's pretty cool. Yeah, so that's Care Dulia and Gary Lockwood. My brain was frozen for a second.
Ric Flair all came to Dragon Con this year.
Awesome. Yeah, Gary, I know, of course, from Star Trek, even as much as from 2001, because he was in the second pilot, Where No Man's Gone Before. But.
Oh, yeah, that's true.
So anyway, awesome. Yeah, but Flair's music, and of course, it's hand in hand. It's not just the music, it's Flair and the whole freaking image and the whole freaking presentation. And so, I mean, you know, athletes love Ric Flair, and they love that belt, and they love that music, and, you know, to the point where they use it, or they'll do it, or they'll strut, or do the whole thing. And have any of y'all seen that video of the guy who did his wedding entrance to Flair's music?
I have seen it.
Yeah. With the robe and everything. And so, I mean, just too cool. And now...
That's a very understanding wife. That's all I'm saying.
I think it was actually to the reception. So I think made it.
Okay, well,
deal.
All right then. Well, that sounds like a compromise. To
yeah,
me.
Yeah.
And now Charlotte has got some of it in her theme song. So that's good. Carrying it on. So yeah, there you go, Mr. Williams. You're up to bat.
Well, I was going to mention that song, and I guess since Richard refrained from mentioning other entrance music in case somebody else has picked them as one of their favorites, there obviously are several others who have used pre-existing pieces of music like that. And for wrestling fans, obviously when you hear those particular songs, you think of those wrestlers more so than whatever else that music might be associated with. And I don't know if that's true of people who aren't into wrestling, because I'm so embedded in it.
Yeah. But,
I don't know if other people hear that song and think Ric Flair or think 2001 or just, it was even a piece of music before 2001, I think, right?
Oh, yeah. It's classic. So, very old. Yep.
So entrance music is, we did the poll and this was the subject that I contributed to that poll. So I'm glad that this is the one we're doing. It's always been interesting to me.
You listen to this guy brag.
I know. I only got one vote on my subject.
I know. That was terrible.
And it was my friend.
I was going to ask, was that you that voted for it?
No, it was my buddy, Stephen Michaud.
I didn't do much better. Joe's the one that got all the other votes. So.
Jerry.
Well, anyway, Jerry. You know, it's a very interesting subject to me because there's debate over who was the first wrestler to use entrance music. I think Sergeant Slaughter laid claim to it, sort of, and the Freebirds.
Well, that's the debate is only from the 80s. There's no question that Gorgeous George probably used it first.
Yeah.
You know, because he did it back in the 50s and he did Pomp and Circumstance, so on and so forth. That was the whole thing. But yeah, Gorgeous, I mean, pretty much everybody agrees that George was the first. Who was the first one to start blaring music over to some PA system and some, you know, arena? That's good, questionable. There are a couple things, but Michael makes it clear that he's the first one to use rock and roll. Sergeant Shaw didn't use rock and roll. So, you know.
No. Yeah. So anyway, so there's lots of interesting approaches to it. And then, of course, you mentioned Jim Johnson earlier, who I think now doesn't do a lot of entrance music. He does a lot of WWE films and stuff. People doing the entrance music now. From what I understand, like a lot of these newer songs are not him necessarily. They've got, I forget, is it there's Currency the, or something?
There's a team of guys.
That's doing a lot of the entrance music now. Couple, we've mentioned
a duo.
Them
there's a duo.
CFO dollar sign.
That's it.
I believe it's.
Yeah, that's what.
Yep. And it's two guys.
So that segues into my, I guess I'm doing this sort of in reverse order. So, and I'm sure I'll think of plenty of others that I would rather have had in my top three later, or you guys are probably going to mention some of the ones that just happened earlier when, you mentioned Marty Scurll. That's a great one.
Yeah, I just listened anyway, to it over and over again.
So similar to Marty Scurll's, I think, is Finn Balor's music. I think it represents him and his character really well, and it's like it just kind of captivates the audience. And what he does along with it, you know, his gestures and stuff, he plays along with it. I'm not sure if he had any input on that or if it's similar. I don't think it's similar to his New Japan music or anything like that. I think it's completely original. But I think, you know, that just like Marty Scurll, it just, if you hear that, I think eventually it will, if it hasn't already, it'll become sort of like Ric Flair's music. When you hear it, you know Finn Balor's coming. Sure.
Oh, absolutely.
I feel like
one of the things that I love about Finn Balor's music, one of the things, or in his entrance, is the crowd participation. Where everybody puts their arms up in the air to the light blowing, and that one particular, you know, note, you know, I always raises the hackles on the back of my head.
That seems like a more recent addition to the wrestling theme genre, like the crowd singing along with that. You know John Cena's theme and The Rock's and all that, but the participation is new, I think, and Shinsuke Nakamura's and Bobby Roode's all crowd participation.
Well, and like a lot of those don't have words, so I mean, I think that's a first.
Yeah.
Finn Balor's doesn't have words, and Shinsuke, they literally sing that song and it doesn't have words. No. I mean, yeah. So I feel like I love Finn Balor's theme, by the way. I bought it on iTunes when it first came out. I liked it so much. But it does feel a little 90s. In fact, Finn Balor feels a little 90s to me, like that sort of Brood, Jeff Hardy,
Gabriel
era. So I mean, that's not a bad thing. No, that's not a bad thing. But it feels that way, you know. I mean, so I mean, for good or bad. I mean, I guess if you didn't like
some
that,
of these guys, so it's a thing. And I want to say, and I don't have any evidence to say this one way or the other, but to me, it seems, I know there are some wrestlers who really take a very active part in helping, you know, choose a thing for themselves and picking and kind of being part of the deal. And then there's others who just whatever, I'll, you know, as long as this sounds okay, I don't care. And I want to say, I would like to say that I believe that the ones who take more of an active part in it are the ones that are better, you know, because it fits them better or it's more involved or it's just their involvement makes it better for that wrestler. I don't know if Finn did or not, but I mean, I can see in my mind's eye Finn, who probably was a kid. Oh, obviously was a kid growing up in the 90s, liking the Hardys, liking, you know, Edge of Christian of the Brood or whatever, and maybe that's not entirely an accident at all. But so I know Bray Wyatt definitely took a big part in his music. He knew he had to have the perfect music, and he was very intent on doing that. I remember him in an interview, he mentioned that. So, and one last thing, referring to the singing along to the non-lyrics, that really, really started with Fandango.
Oh, you know? Sure. Yeah, there you go.
The big Fandango thing. Great. It's back to you, Mr. Crow.
I want to refer back to one of my favorite wrestling things. It was the wrestling album. I got it on cassette. I got the record. It's neat. It was one of the neatest. I mean, the not just to have. It probably started a lot of my geekiness. That record did.
Same.
Because
you took the word from what I was going to say. You bunch of nerds.
Exactly. But
nerd.
Yeah. Again, you say that like it's a bad thing, but. too bad we run the world now.
Yeah,
the thing is, that got me. I was a big fan of novelty music in the first place, and
no.
So I had. I know.
I'm shocked. I'm shocked.
But then wrestling themes. It's just like, oh my gosh, this is like superhero theme songs and novelty songs all at once. And the wrestling album is a comedy bit for an entire album. The bits with the announcers in between are kind of hilarious, but the song that I, instead of just talking about Hulk Hogan's theme, the song that I want to focus on to mention in this round is Hillbilly Jim's theme, which I love unabashedly.
You have mentioned this before, Joe, so it's really kind of
good. But don't go messing with a country boy is the best. It tells you everything you need to know about the character.
Did Jimmy write that one?
Yes, I believe.
Yeah, I figured. Yeah, it had to be Jimmy. Yeah.
And it tells you everything you need to know about the character, and it gets bonus points for having the wrestler himself sing the song.
Yeah. That's
that
right.
Doesn't happen very often.
No, certainly not then. Certainly not then. Definitely not then.
No, but that's your buddies and Jeff Yelton's buddies, the Freebirds. They Michael Hayes sang his own song, and so did Hillbilly Jim. So
he did. He surely did. yeah. So yeah, and see, and I'm glad that you brought that up because. That really, you know, that's when it really exploded. You know, when the WWF really exploded, they definitely took a cue from World Class, and they gave themes to everybody. And then, of course, the wrestling albums and the Pile Drive album and all of a sudden the other. And so that really, from that was the Rubicon. Music became an integral part of wrestling from there on. And Jimmy Hart, I mean, we're talking about Jim Johnston, we're talking about CFO Dollar Sign. Jimmy Hart has written quite a few and a whole lot of music for wrestling. So, and of course, if people out there don't know it, Jimmy come from a musical background. He was actually a member of the group The Gentrys, who had a top 40 hit back in the 60s, and is the one that's played on oldie records, I mean, oldie stations still to this day.
My friend's dad was in that band with him.
Really?
Oh, so yeah. Great.
Awesome. That's great. Yeah. So, I mean, and Jimmy was still playing in not the original Gentry's, but a knockoff of the Gentry's in there in Memphis. And that's where Jerry met him. And then Jerry decided to make him his manager. And the rest is history. But anyway, so, Mr. Yule, it's your turn.
So, I can't imagine many TNA songs will be on this. on this, just for a lot of reasons, but I mean the TNA songs in general weren't very catchy or memorable, in my opinion.
Yeah, they're adequate.
Yeah,
and that's but go ahead.
Well, yes. I could say that I couldn't even tell you what the music was like with the Beautiful People music, but I sure did like the entrance.
Well, sure. but there is one, I mean, I love this wrestler, and for WWE to have dropped the ball on him still amazes me for as great as he is. And they actually got theme music that does him a lot of justice. And in the same realm, the audience gets to sing along to the non-musical. Well, no, I mean, I guess it is a word, but it's EC3's.
So oh, sure.
Yeah, because it, you know, the announcer has the, you know, presents him at first over the music, and then the song is really great, and I just think it fits his character really, really good.
Sure. That's one of the newer songs that sticks with you, and it. It, unlike having to sing a whole song like Hillbilly Jim had to, with EC3, you just get it in one word, and it works perfect.
I mean, so it's cool. I mean, and it fits that. I mean, when they brought him in, he was Dixie Carter's nephew, I think. Obviously,
yes, Ethan Carter the III, because the Carter
still is. He still is.
He still
does it.
I mean, it was obviously a. thing for RG3, who is very popular back when this was out. So I'm guessing that's where his name came from, the NFL. But it's a great name, but equally the theme song is cool. So,
speaking of TNA, one thing I'll say about that, you're all right about most of their themes being pretty generic. Pretty much like WCW got at one point, you know, because they're using a lot of stop music or whatever. Though sometimes that can turn out right, because I love the Horseman music, which was totally stop music. I remember one day I was watching a documentary or some kind of other incidental thing, and the music was used for that. So, the Horseman music. There's a couple of things that stood out, and Jeff Hardy stuck out because that was his own song.
Well, he made all his music, yeah.
He made all his own music, so his stuff stood out because it was, you know, different. But anyway.
Well, for a while, TNA had its own version of Jim Johnson. I don't remember her name, and I don't know if she's still involved, but it was a female. I think she was like a country artist or something.
She was. I recall this now. I believe.
And then Mickey James put out a couple.
She did. I was about to say. Yeah, Mickey did her own too. Yeah. So
there was a lady who what happened? She met Billy Corgan, and Billy Corgan hired her either on the spot or later to work on theme songs for TNA. And so yeah.
Well, I'm thinking before Billy Corgan was involved, they had somebody. And I don't think she did all of the music, but she probably did 50% of it. But then when Billy Corgan was there, you know, he was using Smashing Pumpkins music and Marilyn Manson, probably just people, his friends and stuff, just like, hey, can you give us the rights of this? And then
the Smashing Pumpkins song Zero would be great for an entrance music for somebody.
I forget who, he came out to a newer Smashing Pumpkins song.
Right.
Whenever he would come out. And then Decay came out to a Marilyn Manson song, I remember.
Yeah.
And then as soon as he was gone, Decay's music was was very similar sounding, but not Marilyn Manson.
Right.
I almost hated those more, the ones that, like, I mean, I don't think I'm stealing anybody's, but like Diamond Dallas Page's, like, it smells like
Teen Spirit.
Yeah, but it was just crappier.
Yeah, cold, crappy.
Was it? You know, Jericho that sounded like a Pearl Jam song.
Yes. I mean,
it was just like they would.
The WCW stuff was at a certain period there at the Nitros. It was terrible, just terrible.
Well, they spent all their money on Jimi Hendrix and Metallica. Yeah, that's right.
Yes.
However, now to this day, whenever I hear "Smells Like Teen Spirit," I say self high five right after.
It is.
And
there you go.
That is the furthest thing away from what they intended for that song.
I'm sure it is.
They're not happy. They're not giving themselves self high fives.
No, they're not self high fiving, though. The closest thing he come to doing a self high five, we're not going to do a suicide joke here, folks. Keep on moving. So anyway.
Courtney Love.
You set it up and then didn't.
That gives you plausible deniability, Joe.
That's right.
So, but before we move on, mentioning Marilyn Manson, I have to say real quick, it's a little on the topic, but not entirely on topic, but who here loved When They Had Beautiful People as the theme song for Raw?
Well, sure.
It was so great, and then I was so heartbroken when they moved away from it.
I think the original Raw theme song was written by Anthrax. Like, they did it just for WWF.
Right, yes, and that's good.
So that was cool.
That was great.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah, I've always been a Marilyn Manson fan, so I like that.
Yes. Well, it's just...
And then he did the Celebrity Deathmatch theme song, or
how? Oh,
yeah, he did. He did. Whose turn is it? I forgot.
Yours.
I think it's my turn.
No,
it's mine.
He never said nothing. We just rambled on about WCW and TNA because we probably won't mention it again.
He did the EC3 thing. Yeah, you know, I just sort of check out when that happens.
Now, John started thinking about the beautiful people, and that was the
end. I was thinking is that I was trying to remember.
45 minutes later.
But Drowning Pools, Let the Bodies Hit the Floor is such a perfect wrestling theme song.
Yeah, I like that one. That one was for Raw.
ECW.
Yes.
That's right.
And of course, ECW also, the original, they had the revamped version of Rob Zombie or the Zombies.
Thunder Kiss 65.
Yeah, but greatness. So I do love that. But, I didn't even think about any ECW themes.
Yeah, now I
had
love
some
those.
Good ones.
Yeah,
well, most of them were used without permission, weren't they?
Yeah, probably 98% were.
Paul Heyman definitely subscribed to the better to ask for forgiveness than for permission. So he certainly did. But yeah, there's a couple of my very favorites from there. But I'm going to go with what I had originally. And that is the Midnight Express theme music that they used, which is a sort of revamped version of the theme from movie Midnight Express. Just was so perfect, so great. It just was part of that package that makes the Midnight Express, while not my favorite tag team, because the Freebirds are my second favorite tag team, but to my mind, I think the greatest pure tag team ever, with the package of the manager and the two members and so on and so forth, and the music and the whole thing just worked so perfect, and just that theme. And that's definitely one of those. I mean, I even saw the movie before the Midnight Express came about and started using the music. But now, when I hear that music, even the actual original thing, I think of the Midnight Express. I don't think of the movie. So.
Yeah, I don't know how memorable the movie is. Really,
it was a big deal at the time.
Was it okay?
It was really a big deal at the time because it was very edgy. It was very controversial. It was and critically acclaimed and did pretty well at the box office. But it's definitely one of those that has not reverted to classic status. It's sort of a forgotten thing. But
so, do you think while people were watching it, while watching that movie in the theater, they were going, you know what, this would be perfect for two shirtless dudes in Atlanta, Georgia.
You know, that's a question I want to ask Jim Cornette, because I don't know how they came about using it. I don't know, I don't remember if they started it in Mid-South or if that was... No, I know. At least they did definitely used it in World Class, but that might have been where they started using it. Because I don't know.
I think you could get a 45-minute conversation with him out of that one question. So.
Well, you don't have conversations with Jimmy Cornette.
That's true.
Question.
Monologue.
Answers.
Yeah. And then you have to mention Vince Russo.
Throw it in there. Yeah.
He has never referred to him by name anymore. And Vince doesn't refer to him by name either, because I don't know if y'all guys knew or seen or any of it, but him and Stevie Ray have had two trade-offs on each one of their shows. It's obvious that they're doing theirs tongue-in-cheek. They're obviously friends. But
anyway, let's keep going.
Oh, okay, yeah, sure. I got distracted again. That's what I guess I was thinking about Charmel. Just Stevie Ray, Booker T, Charmel.
Thanks for queen tracking Charmel. It back. Exactly. Yeah, she is a queen. Thank you.
She is a queen.
That is royalty.
Royalty, yes, respect. Indeed. She is. And I'm doing the royal wave, even if it's... All right, Mr. Williams.
Well, I wanted to. I was trying to think of a WCW theme that would be a good one. And in addition to a lot of them not being very good, they also are hard to find now because WWE has kind of erased them and replaced them with those wrestlers' WWE entrance music is.
Oh, did they do that on the network? Yeah. Oh, no.
With a lot of it, they did, yeah. Like Chris Jericho, I know, in particular, on DVDs as well. It has his, you know, the WWE music he's had since 2000 or whatever.
Bummer.
But it's on stuff pre-2000.
Pardon me.
I'm curious, didn't Jimmy Hart do a lot of that music?
Yeah, absolutely. Yes, he did. And his stuff was good. Yeah, for most part. Yes.
So he didn't do the knockoffs of grunge music and stuff?
Oh, no, he totally did.
Yeah, he totally did. Yes. So, I mean, I'm talking about his original stuff, not the... Yeah, so... No, Jimmy was responsible for that. Jimmy, you bad boy.
I was able to think of one WCW entrance theme that kind of had some staying power and was actually still being used recently, and that's for Goldberg.
Yes.
Yeah, absolutely. Sure. Very effective.
It's as iconic as some of the other ones we've mentioned.
It is.
I mean,
it
it's,
really is.
Mm-hmm. In there again, the entrance is part of that.
Exactly.
Yeah.
I'm here to say that this. Goldberg, about 95% of Goldberg is the entrance. Yeah, well, then you got the jackhammer and then that's it.
His entrance lasts longer than the matches, so
yeah.
Yes.
Yeah.
His look, now, the entrance, and the two moves. That's Goldberg.
Tell me this, though. Did anybody notice? And this stuck with me at the time, and it was when he went to WWE. After, like, I think his first appearance, this stuck in my craw. They tweaked his original theme, so it didn't have the same cadence. There was something to my ear; it was different, and it
wouldn't be surprised. I wouldn't be surprised. Just one more thing that they screwed up on Goldberg's original.
But then, when he made his big comeback last year, original theme again.
Yeah.
And worked out great. So, I don't know if anything happened.
I'll give an example of just how strong that theme is, that it was able to withstand and live past one of the greatest parodies of all time.
That's true. That is true.
Because usually something like that will just put a pin in the balloon and it will not go back up. But apparently, you know, Goldberg's strong enough to handle a little bit of teasing. So,
I certainly hope so.
So Goldberg, that's a good choice. I was going to say something else about the WCW thing, but it's passed and it's gone off into the dark of night and it's probably long, long gone now. So. Before we go back around the third time, do we have enough time to do a little bonus round?
Right. You want to do it now?
Yeah,
we'll fit it in.
Okay. I would like us each to now choose a song or a piece of music that you think would have made a great wrestling theme, but never was.
Oh.
Starting with you, Mr. Crow.
Let me see. Off the top of my head. Oh, gosh. I immediately wanted to go to something from Black Sabbath, because I had Iron Man queued up to talk about the Road Warriors, which we'll probably eventually do. But let's see.
Spoilers,
yes. Oh, I've got it. It is Holding Out for a Hero by Bonnie Tyler from Footloose.
Ah, there you go. That's good. I like that. Yeah.
When I was in the early 90s, I, with Jeff Yelton, one of our roundtable buddies, we and a handful of other people ran our own federation, our own email wrestling federation, where we played with the Champions of the Galaxy wrestling game. And my two guys were basically Ricky Steamboats. And our theme was that song. And we lost every match. It was great.
Wasn't that the, I think that was used as the theme song for, what was it? The show with Joe Pedicino and...
Oh, Bonnie Blackstone? Yes, maybe it was.
But that's not entrance music. That was the show's theme song.
That's true, but it never, like, nobody ever adopted it as entrance music, to my knowledge, and I'm sure somebody. But that's my pick right there. One of my favorites.
Good choice. Mr. Yule.
I don't know how this would actually work. It'd probably have to be like a Sandman kind of entrance, like long and drawn out, but... it's one of my favorite songs ever, and I've always thought it'd make a cool entrance, is Thunderstruck by AC/DC.
Yep.
Yeah.
Like, it's long, and there's a huge buildup, but, and I don't know how it would actually work, but, it'd be cool.
It's funny, because mine is kind of almost exactly the same. It's AC/DC. It is a very specific piece of music that would only work for a specific type of characters. But Dirty.
Billy Jim?
No, never did Billy Jim. This is definitely not Hillbilly Jim. This music would be perfect for the revival. Dirty Deeds Done Dirt Cheap.
Or it's Dean Ambrose.
Dean Ambrose, actually back in the day, Killer Tim Brooks. That would have been perfect for Killer Tim Brooks. I mean, because he was just a type of classic heel, was always a heel, and he was one of those type of heels that really was far more interested in being a wrestling to hurt people than ever to be a champion.
Yeah.
As a matter of fact, they played off on a great angle in Georgia Championship Wrestling, where when Larry Zbysko came in, and he was wanting the National Heavyweight Championship, and he set up it, and then Killer Tim Brooks won it, and he paid Killer Tim Brooks to buy the title.
$23 and a ham sandwich.
Yes. that's exact. Killer Tim Brooks, Dirty Deeds, Done Dirt Cheap. Because he cheated to get it. So, I mean, there you go. So.
Sidebar, I do not like the name of Dean Ambrose's finisher. He calls it Dirty Deeds, but it's one move. It's one deed.
It is true. It's one deed. It's only one deed. You're right. Mr. Williams.
Did anybody ever use a Queen song?
I was going to go with Queen. There's a couple of ones that Queen did that I think would be great. I don't know.
I don't think anybody did.
The closest thing that we've got to Queen is Glorious. Because there's part of Glorious is very Queen-like.
Yeah, it is.
Yeah,
but I really don't think anyone ever.
No,
I mean, I'm sure Jerry the King Lawler used "We Are the Champions" at various times.
Well,
but
there's
a couple of companies
that somebody used that as a special thing. Yeah,
sure, but no, I don't think anybody
ever is a regular thing. I don't think. Mm-hmm. No. So which one are you gonna go with?
Well, that's, I guess, another one bites the dust.
I just thought of one.
Dang it. Me too.
I did. I just thought of one. In world class, Eric Embry used We Will Rock You. Yep. He sure did. But that's okay. Just only one.
Yeah, and I mean, really.
Don't
has, like, really, like, 25 songs that could have been used for entrance music.
Yeah. You know, it's funny. I used to run a fiction. I know you've done this too, Joe, but I used to run online fictional wrestling feds, and then also, well, even before that, using the old Superstar Wrestling Federation cards and so on and so forth. And all this, that, and the other. my friend Cliff, who just happens to be gay, he created a gay-themed wrestler. I know that's completely outrageous. It's never been done in real wrestling. But he built his whole thing off of the song Killer Queen. That was the name of the character.
Perfect.
He dressed in the classic white, you know, one piece outfit that Freddie wore, you know, early in the career, and had the hair and the look. He basically looked like Freddie Mercury. He was Killer Queen, came up to that song, had his own court as his, you know, group, faction, and so yeah, it worked really well. And did the thing where he started out as a heel, because of course all the rednecks hated the fact that he was this flamboyant gay guy, but eventually when he turned on a bad guy, he became, you know, the top babyface.
I just thought of another one. Another one bites the dust, I believe Junkyard Dog used.
Yes, he did.
I was thinking somebody had used it.
Yes, he did. You're right. Yep.
But then, of course, Wrestling Album came along and Grab Them Cakes.
Grab Them Cakes, yeah.
Which was actually on my list.
Which
he sang,
too. Which he sung that one, too.
Yes. Again, as I said, extra points.
Yes. All right, Mr. Crow. Well, going back to the original subject, your last pick, make it good.
The American Dream Dusty Rhodes song Common Man.
Common Man.
That does not surprise me, Jim.
It is just, yeah. Yeah.
Well, it's because he made it work.
Yep. He made that whole thing work.
He made the whole thing work because of his very Dusty Rhodiness. A lesser individual would have taken that gimmick and shotgunned it like a red rooster or a...
You beat me to it, you bastard!
We all had our Terry Taylor jokes ready to fire.
Haven't we had this conversation before?
I feel like we have. Exactly.
We have talked about Terry Taylor before.
But you know what? You know what? Maybe, though, since I could talk about and we could talk about Dusty Rhodes, let me set aside my own pick, and I will say the Big Boss Man's theme.
Oh,
yeah, that's a good one.
That's a good one. Yeah.
Because
I've never liked it.
Oh,
what? I know.
Oh no.
I just, for some reason, I've never really cared for it.
There's something about it. It was just a neat little 80s song that told you the whole story of the character, all wrapped up into one thing. That's all you needed. And I was super disappointed when he came back to WWE in the 90s, never used it.
He was the SWAT man. SWAT team.
Yeah. Never even once for funsies did they play that song again. And I was furious. Big Boss Man Dusty Rhodes, who feuded, so that was like a battle of two amazing theme songs. both of those songs totally embodied the character, and that doesn't happen all the time, and it's only started happening again lately with Bobby Roode and Shinsuke Nakamura, etc.
Right. Yeah, all right, Jim. Okay. Works
I like for me. Dusty. I like Dusty because it has the cowbell.
Oh yeah.
You gotta have cowbell.
More cowbell. Yes, indeed. you know, Dusty's one of those guys because he wrestled everywhere. I mean, Yeah, a lot of people don't realize, the younger people sometimes don't realize that Dusty was a huge star before Hulk Hogan ever was. I mean, he wrestled in Florida, he wrestled in Georgia, he wrestled in Mid-Atlantic, he wrestled in Houston, he wrestled in New York, he wrestled everywhere as a headliner. And he a lot of times did use music, but he never had a consistent one that he used. Probably the only one he had on a regular basis was when he was the Midnight Rider, using Midnight Rider, which worked incredibly well.
He also used, for a time, he used You Can't Judge a Book by Its Cover.
That's right.
By Hank Williams Jr.
Yes, yes, he did. So, yeah, Dusty always had great entrances, but he didn't really have that one theme that just kind of stuck with him until I'm a Common Man, which exactly. Is perfect for him, you know, so... And obviously he dug it and kept it, and that he's quite fond of it, or was quite fond of it before he died. But okay, Mr. Yule.
So again, sticking with my new wrestling entrances, I haven't seen a whole lot of him. He's on NXT, and I try to catch it when I can. But I love his entrance, and I do like him as a character. I think he's gonna be big things when he goes to WWE eventually. But Aleister Black,
oh, so good.
Yeah,
you know, and this is you know, I mean, and he's kind of known for bringing black metal into wrestling, because you know, it just doesn't happen that much, and his entrance is pretty awesome.
Oh, that music and him rising up, you know, it just, his whole thing works for me. I like it a lot. Yeah, good choice. Very good choice.
Yeah, and now, it's by a band, and they were, you know, I was going to mention it earlier, but I knew I was going to talk about them, but they did, on the last Takeover, I think, the band played, and he walked through.
Yes, yes, it was at the last Takeover. Yep, absolutely. Yeah.
Incendiary is the name of the band.
Yes.
Oh, sweet.
And he rose up with the band. He was there with the band.
Yes.
He rose up among them. That was
very,
great.
Very, very Gangrelish.
Very Gangrelish, which is one of my favorite things. and we mentioned it earlier, of course, with Finn Balor. But that whole thing and the music. And it was growly music. So I always love that.
Apparently, everybody has their hands in on that theme, because Code Orange also is in that theme, and and the CFO dollar sign.
Yeah, well, there you go.
So,
well, it works.
Yeah.
Anyway, earlier, and as he mentioned in the podcast itself, but earlier Richard mentioned that he was probably going to go with all newer stuff. So I purposely chose. Just avoided that because I didn't want to necessarily step on his toes, but I also wanted to make sure it was balanced with what I want, you know, spread it around. So I've picked two older themes. My third one, I was going to pick something from the Attitude Era. And there's a lot from the Attitude Era that I love. There's Stone Cold, you know, glass breaking and bass guitar. There's, you know, the DX theme. There's Triple H's theme. There's, just mentioned the Brood. There's Christian's music. There's Edge's music.
Oh, sure, yeah.
So, but I wasn't going to do this one, but it's just sticking in my head, and it is going on a limb, and it's a bit controversial. But damn it, Chris Benoit's theme was badass. It was just badass.
Yeah.
And I listened to it today, and it stuck with me, and I just got reminded just how freaking cool it was, and I just have to say it. So since I'm not the last person, and Jonathan Williams can save us at the end, I'm going to go with Chris Benoit's theme music.
Are you talking about his WWF
entrance? Yes, the Attitude Era, the WWF, or WWE entrance, yes.
Was that a Jim Johnson creation?
I think so, yeah.
You know, it was, but like a lot of that Attitude Era stuff, they did that one where bands were then made to remake that, and then they did that one. That was one of the songs that they picked. I forget who did it, but it was good even then. But yeah, I agree. That's a good one.
It's the guitar in that is just.
Well, I know a lot of times Jim Johnson would write music with the band. Like, I guess I guess he was the one who would go find bands that he likes, or maybe somebody else was responsible for that. I don't know, but he would collaborate with bands sometimes. So maybe that was one of those. I don't know. I'm trying to remember what Chris Benoit's WCW entrance music sounded like, and I can't remember.
Something generic, I would guess. Because that's what I feel most of WCW's stuff was, you know. I mean, even Chris Jericho's, I can't even remember.
Chris Jericho's?
It was the Pearl Jam.
From WCW? I can't even remember it. Like, I just...
WCW.
Yeah.
Oh, y'all talking about the WCW. Okay, yeah, no, yeah. I don't. I don't remember. All that stuff was generic. I'm sorry, I got misconstrued. I thought you were like, yeah, dude, era stuff wasn't generic. It was great.
No.
All right. Well, I guess that's a lot of responsibility you've put on me to end it on something other than Chris Benoit.
I trust you.
I mean, it's not that tough, right? I mean, no. To be fair, like you could pretty much mention anybody else, and it's better than Chris Benoit.
Hey, that's not true.
Well, I mean, as far as the name and what he's known for.
Oh, well, yeah, sure. Yeah, my suggestion is to go with the Honky Tonk Man.
Well, mine is oddly close to that, and I think anybody that knows me probably knows what I'm going to say.
I know.
One of Jim Johnson's finest creations, and that's the Ultimate Warrior entrance music.
Oh, yeah. There you go.
All
yeah.
Three notes of it.
It gets your blood boiling, that's true.
Yeah, it does, and I think it's on the network now, but there was a DVD that WWE put out a few years ago, and it has Fandango on the cover, because I guess at the time he was probably the reason they put the DVD out, honestly, even though his entrance music wasn't one of the top ones. I think it's called Signature Sounds, the music of WWE.
Right.
And I remember, you know, the Ultimate Warrior one being very high. It might have been number one. I don't remember. But, you know, that's pretty much what everybody said was like, you know, it was like, it's probably the most simple song Jim Johnson ever wrote, but you know, it's the energy of the Ultimate Warrior. It's the perfect music for him to run out at full speed and run around the ring
get
several
blown
times
up before he starts the match.
Yeah.
I mean, if he didn't run out to it, like, it wouldn't have been good. Like, I mean, that's what, you know, these entrances are good with the music because of the actual entrance as well, I think, is what we've kind of discovered along our talk.
Yeah.
Well, you know, that does remind me real quick, though, when we're talking about the WCW generic stuff. That, as bad as it was, is not as bad as that terrible generic rock music that they use on the network in place of some of the rock songs that some of the guys went to in the territories.
It doesn't even sound
like the music. Yeah.
So a few times we've mentioned things that we've actually talked about in the past, like the Terry Taylor. You can look in the archives and look there. But in the Pro Wrestling Time Machine, the first one we did, that was actually a big deal theme was just this generic thing. Because they don't have the rights to them. It's very expensive.
And I tell you, that's one of the hardest things going back to world class, because, of course, they don't play, you know, ZZ Top's LaGrange. They don't play Tom Sawyer by Rush, which was Carrie's theme and which was perfect for him, which gave him his nickname, the Modern Day Warrior, and none of that. And it's just hard, especially since I watched them back then. But, you know, I guess they don't want to spend the money on clearing all that. So.
Well, and another thing that shocked me was, you know, when Undertaker came out to Johnny Cash's Hurt, you know, that whole build up, and then he came out to it at WrestleMania. That doesn't happen now. If you watch the DVD, it's not on there.
Have you went back and see if he's still using the Kid Rock thing from his biker days?
I mean, I'd say so, because I'd say, but I have not. But the American Badass.
He also used a Limp Bizkit song during that period.
Rollin', yep.
rolling. Yeah.
Maybe those songs because, but I don't know. I mean, I think the Johnny Cash one was, first off, Johnny Cash is very expensive. Like, the family didn't, he didn't normally do that stuff. He didn't let other things play his music. And so I think they basically rented it for, like, 2 months, and then it was done. But so that, the copyright thing has affected wrestling music, and it still does. So
yeah, surely does. Well, anyway, as always, we could talk about this all night long, but we can't, so we won't. And but we'd like to thank you once again. Hey, everybody's listening. We need you to participate, just on the message board or, you know, in comments or any kind of thing. Let us know what your favorite themes are. We would love to hear that. We'd love to hear what some of the stuff that we morons missed out on that we can't, you can't believe we didn't bring up. So
yeah,
anyway,
I'd like to mention a few things that we can, that they can do that to. We've got a Twitter that I'm pretty regular on. I try to be anyway. Post some fun stuff there at ES. We are still under the Earth Station One umbrella, and so our name, as most of you know, used to be ESO Pro. But we've dropped it to the Pro Wrestling Roundtable. We've talked about that in the past. But our stuff is still mainly ESO Pro. So if you go to facebook.com/groups/ESO Pro, you can find us there. ESO Pro Podcast is on Twitter. And that's the email address as well, esopropodcast@gmail.com. So you can contact us either of those ways. Facebook is definitely a way to be a part of the group, and this is how this episode came about. We each picked a topic, and we put up a poll, and the entrance music beat everybody else out.
Absolutely. That this was totally chosen by our listeners and by our group on the Pro Wrestling Roundtable Facebook page. So, you know, I would love to do this again. So it was very successful, I think. This theme was a majority winner, by no question. But we'd also like to point out before we leave that this is actually our 60th show. And so we are very gratified that we're still doing this. We all enjoy it. And we certainly have every intention of going on and doing it. We're trying to expand. We have different ideas about what we want to do. We are hoping that we are working now on trying to make a presence on the YouTube. So, you know, we'll certainly let everybody know when that's available. So, anyway, that's all for now. You all have a good night. And thank you all again, Joe. Thank you for joining us again. John and Richard, thank you always for your great work. And sayonara.
This has been a broadcast of the ESO Network, your station for all things geek, classic, current, and beyond. Be part of the crew at esonetwork.com.